So, technocracy, swerving, or how to swerve a revolution. I shall talk for about 15 minutes or so. And the reason I've chosen to talk on this particular subject is my growing fear and suspicion that bit by bit, our relative freedoms, and I think comrades would agree that these are not real freedoms but privileges which can be bestowed or withdrawn, are being eroded, often surreptitiously, or on the back of some calamity or other. The 1% definitely want to keep theirs and will do anything and everything in their power to quash dissent and keep the lid on a revolution. To do this, they need to keep control. And to keep control, it seems to me that the state is passing ever more draconian laws. I hear comrades criticise repressive state control in countries like China, and in my view, naively think it couldn't happen here. I'm disappointed that often conversations are shut down, even by the so-called left, with the accusation of conspiracy theorist, without actually looking at or discussing any evidence or facts. In writing this talk, I kept going off at tangents as one thought led to another, but I hope not to ramble, but to present certain facts concerning the erosion of our civil liberties, and then suggest a way or ways the 1% are already organising or might reorganise to counteract or swerve a revolution. So, Howard Scott has been called the founder of the technocracy movement. He started what was called the Technic Alliance in New York at the end of 1919. Members of this alliance were mostly scientists and engineers. The technocracy movement proposed replacing politicians and business people with scientists and engineers with the technical expertise to manage the economy. The movement gained traction in North America as a response to the Great Depression, when its members anticipated a collapse of the price system. There were similar movements in Europe, namely Germany before the Second World War, and a Russian movement with Bolshevik and philosopher Alexander Bogdanov, whose writing implied that the coming revolution against capitalism would lead to a technocratic society. In a publication from the 1938 Technocracy Incorporated, the main organisation made the following statement, from which I've taken the main points. Technocracy is the science of social engineering to produce and distribute goods and services to the whole population. No politicians, financiers, rackets or racketeers. Technocracy states that price and abundance are incompatible. The greater the abundance, the smaller the price. In real abundance, there can be no price at all. Yeah, it sounds familiar. To go on. Technocracy will distribute by means of a certificate of distribution available to every citizen from birth to death. Whatever that means, that my emphasis. I will refer to this sentence later on. According to the movement's calculations, it would be enough for every citizen to work a cycle of 4 consecutive days, 4 hours a day, followed by 3 days off. The system would include holiday periods allocated to each citizen. Sounds good. But there was no collapse of the price system, and after 1948, the movement more or less disintegrated. So, technocracy sounds fairly benign. Some of you may be familiar with Jack Fresco and the Venus Project. I recall the project being described as a technocracy by a couple of comrades some while ago. Born in New York in 1916 and died in Florida in 2017, Jack Fresco was a futurist, structural engineer, architectural designer, and author, known for the Venus Project, which proposes an alternative vision of the future, and his RBE ideas. RBE meaning a global resource-based economy, which is a method of resource management that operates within the carrying capacity of the Earth. No money needed. If you go into the website, the initial blurb reads, "Our methodologies are designed to realize the full potential of science and technology to achieve social betterment for all living systems. We advocate new ways of thinking and living to enable human beings, technology and nature to progress sustainably." Very briefly, his futurist design cities are run by a central computer, which decides what and how goods are produced and how they are distributed. No leaders, no borders, nation states, war or money. He declares the earth and all its resources the common heritage of all. I believe he could have been a member of the Socialist Party. I could talk much more about the Venus Project, but I believe the talk next Friday will delve more into a possible post-capitalist society. Peter Joseph, by the way, studied for a while under Fresco and got a lot of his ideas from him. I'd be very happy to live in this society. However, like socialism, it will be resisted against, even though no one would have anything to lose and everything to gain. Technology and artificial intelligence have the potential to aid humanity and provide abundance for all. However, in order to keep us in our place, I think the future of these technologies could turn out to be far more sinister. Laws that are rushed through in response to calamities like the attack on the US Twin Towers and the coronavirus pandemic were, and supposed to be, temporary. However, these laws so often never get repealed. The USA Patriot Act, designed to counteract terrorism, was signed into law by George Bush in October 2001, 6 weeks after the attack on the towers. The act expanded the abilities of law enforcement for surveillance, including the tapping of domestic and international phones. But abuses of the act led to government spying on innocent individuals. The act had to be periodically reviewed because of concerns that certain provisions could be used to violate privacy rights. Most of the act has been written into permanent law. Obama extended it in 2011, and just before it expired in March 2020, 19 years after its introduction, a further amended extension was approved, but was postponed after Trump vetoed the bill. As of June 2020, the Patriot Act remains expired. Uncle Joe Biden will no doubt pass the bill, as he has in the past boasted that he wrote, and I quote, practically all of it. In 2020, the UK Coronavirus Act was passed in direct opposition to Articles 10 and 11 of the Human Rights Act, which refer to our rights of peaceful assembly and association. In an article from The Guardian on the 3rd of November 2020, it reads, "Protection for protesters are set to be removed from the coronavirus rules under the second national lockdown, an exemption that permits demonstrations to take place with additional conditions designed to mitigate the spread of the virus, is expected to be omitted from fresh regulations being drawn up from this Thursday." The police had allowed and facilitated some demonstrations. However, there have been questions as to whether the prohibitions on demonstrations were impartially and proportionately policed. Last week, I'm sure we've all read this, a 61-year-old nurse was issued with a £10,000 fine for organising a demonstration of about 40 people protesting against the government's 1% pay increase for NHS workers. Once the pandemic has subsided and we go back to no restrictions, as promised, I wonder whether these laws will be repealed or dragged out every time there's a protest or demo, citing health concerns. You could say that for us, public meetings, debates, and outdoor speaking are no longer de rigueur, and so perhaps won't directly affect us. But what about social media and the internet? Online social media groups are now being highly censored. WhatsApp messages, for instance, will no longer be private and can be read by Facebook and can be shared with state surveillance sources if necessary. Here on Discord, we have already had a talk on cancel culture, and it appears to be censorship by the few over the many. Comrades have also discussed the new banning of teaching material that calls for an end to capitalism as political extremism. There have also been state shutdowns of the internet all over the world. Protesters have been using the internet to organise online and to assemble and protest offline. Governments are increasingly resorting to shutdowns in times of crisis, arguing they are necessary for public safety or curbing the spread of misinformation. Misinformation, presumably, information being contrary to what the government wants you to have. The worst offender, not an authoritarian state, but the largest democracy in the world, India. NetGD is a 2018 German law which compels social media companies to remove, quote, hate speech and other illegal content. Illegal content as defined in 22 provisions of the Criminal Code. This law has been criticised by the Human Rights Watch, saying, "This law sets a dangerous precedent for other governments to restrict speech online by forcing companies to censor on the government's behalf." In China, the Citizen Identification Number System, or ID card, is the only acceptable document used for everything from opening a bank account to registering for a mobile phone. It's used to buy train tickets and pass through security checkpoints. Police can inspect the ID cards for basically any reason, and these cards also state the holder's ethnic group. In one province of the country, the authorities are piloting a scheme introducing a virtual version of the physical card. Now, Boris Johnson had at one time scoffed at the idea of ID cards and, referring to China, said it would never happen in Britain. "We now at this moment have to have special permits to travel abroad," reminding one of the old USSR. There is debate in Parliament on the introduction of health passports. How long before these ID cards carry more information than just our health status? And I understand that our health status is a private matter. Remember the certificate of distribution available to every citizen from birth to death I mentioned earlier? At the moment, surveillance technology is mostly used by law enforcement and for selling us stuff. However, it's being used for the NHS track and trace scheme, which has been given permission by the government to share information with police if requested. The system is run by Serco, one of the biggest private providers of UK government services, and who says it expects profits to exceed expectations this year thanks to COVID-related work. The government has passed almost 400 new laws or regulations in the past year, only a few of which have been approved by Parliament. That's democracy for you. An article in the South China Post in February tells us that facial recognition technology has been increasingly deployed by countries to secure access and improve surveillance, especially during the pandemic. The technology is controversial, not just because data leaks are common, but because of its potential to exacerbate racial or gender biases. In the wake of the Black Lives Matter protests, several companies, including IBM, Microsoft, and Amazon, announced they would either pause selling their facial recognition systems or stop producing them entirely. By the way, on the iPhone, the built-in camera can analyze more than 30,000 infrared dots and create a crude 3D image or model of a user's face and is designed to adapt to change in a user's appearance, such as wearing makeup, hats or glasses, etc. We're now encouraged to snitch on our neighbours for not following the rules, snitching on neighbours in receipt of government handouts, and now COVID non-conformers. The climate of fear and suspicion is leading the working class to turn on each other. You see it every day in the supermarkets and even on the street. In North Carolina University, USA, the students can use an app called Saferways, which they can use to report COVID rule breaches on campus to the authorities. Though not allowed to use names, students can grass up their colleagues. Post-pandemic plans by governments would appear hopeful and encouraging, with slogans like "Build Back Better," used by both Biden and Johnson. The Trump campaign claimed that Biden had ripped off a slogan from Boris Johnson in a video on July 9th, 2020. Johnson, in another video, used the phrase on May 28th. "We owe it to the future generations to build back better." In fact, the phrase first surfaced on April 22nd in a UN press release marking International Mother Earth Day. And I quote, "As the world begins planning for a post-pandemic recovery, the United Nations is calling on all governments to seize the opportunity to build back better by creating more sustainable, resilient, and inclusive societies." The UN have even translated the slogan into many other languages so that all over the world, politicians can sing from the same hymn sheet. We'll see how that one turns out. Build Back Better seems to be Build Back Bigger, with corporations like Amazon, etc., swallowing up all the small businesses that have gone bust. The high streets are decimated with everything bought online now. Who needs restaurants when restaurants can come to you? Everything can be delivered. you need never leave the house. Politicians seem somehow to be unnecessary. After all, we know they don't really make the decisions or run the country. They're a source of distraction and sometimes pure entertainment. The world is run by, or for the benefit of, large corporations whose heads, I think, are the modern 1%. The barons, lords and ladies, the old aristocracy, is long gone. They're selling off their big houses and land as they've run out of money. Technocrats and bureaucrats run the place, leaving a new underclass of redundant workers on universal basic income, being kept an eye on through technology. Behave or your money is stopped, as is happening now with sanctions in the benefit system. I'm a day-to-day optimist, but I don't like the way the world is going. Perhaps it's my age. I remember the relative freedom and hope for the future back in the 60s. Perhaps youngsters who won't have known anything different will be more accepting. I hope not. I'm deeply concerned that the gradual and often in small steps, laws and restrictions, surveillance, monitoring and censorship will leave us with no platform, no way of rallying our class. I see our world run by technology, technicians, corporations and artificial intelligence, making politicians redundant. And this is how I see the 1% swerving a revolution, by making it virtually impossible for us to raise consciousness. Now, our party does not advocate reforms, but surely we must rail against the worst that the state can dish out. I don't know how we do that. Just like the unions try to protect workers and we support union action, we should at least be more vigilant and not regard all predictions of a dystopian future as conspiracy theory. Let's not sleepwalk into a future, comrades, that not only we didn't want, but we never even imagined. Thank you.